Well, thanks for everyone for coming out. I think everybody knows what's going on, so there's no need to really say anything.
We just get a blast. So.
Except I'm glad that Don is here and that Dave has agreed to introduce him, so let's get the show on the road. Dave Rich.
Well, Don is certainly no stranger to Gloucester or to the Gloucester Writers' Center. And every time he comes back, I know we're in for another compelling report from the field of Don's encounters with the complexity of place or with language, all of which is minutely scrutinized and deeply felt. And tonight we're going to hear his latest, his translations from Antonio Gamoneda and Emilio Prados. And I think the translations will speak for themselves. I just wanted to say that what might not be commonly known is that Don is a tremendously encouraging person. And when I sent him a sheaf of my own poems last year, Don returned them with really insightful handwritten notes on almost every poem in the pile. Perceptive comments and sympathetic criticisms. And where it was warranted, I hope, enthusiastic praise. And that's the kind of serious appraisal of one another's work that I think is increasingly rare. And perhaps the only insight that I could give into Don's writing, I think I have already put into an introduction for his bilingual selected poems, which should come out in Spain next year. And in that introduction, I tried to draw an arc from the coast of Maine, where his Cranberry Island series is set, to Santiago de Compostela and the Galician coast, where his North Atlantic Wall is primarily set. And the image that came to me was the scallop shell, which is this enduring symbol of Christian pilgrimage. And in that image, the points of the scallop shell, rim of the scallop shell, all converge as lines pulled toward the shell's hinge, representing all the lines taken by pilgrims, beginning each in a different and disparate place, uniting in communion at the center and goal of the pilgrimage. But what my mind did was I flipped the metaphor so that pilgrimage became a kind of counter-pilgrimage, which I thought was like conquest becoming counter-conquest in the writing of this Cuban poet, José Lezama Lima. In Don's poems, the poet is this hinge, and the lines of the scallop shell are radiating up and outward, tethering the poet to a spectrum of these relations on the shell's furthest edges and then beyond. And so in these following translations, I'm sure we'll see just how seriously and honestly felt Don takes the concept and practice of relatedness and perception. So it's my pleasure to introduce Don Wellman.
Lovely, David. Much appreciation. I'm going to, I would like to meditate on what David just said. I suppose I should start reading the poetry. One of my favorite metaphors when it comes to bivalves like the scallop, though, is that the foot, which is the meat, is also the stomach. So the inside and outside sort of flipping together. I'm going to talk about Antonio Gamoneda first. I'm just going to read from my first book that I translated, which is Gravestones. Gamoneda, born in 1931 maybe, has active memories of the Spanish Civil War, including, you know, atrocities committed in his native, well, the city where he lived, León. He remembers carcasses hanging from the lamppost and the use of the beautiful convent there as a prison and dungeon for people that we would call freedom fighters. And I just thought I'd read from the earlier book one or two poems, because they're more lyrical than the book I just published. This one is, they don't have titles. Besieged by angels and blue ash, you grow dumb until warned by non-existence, and the wind penetrates your spirit. You inhale the scorn, the intoxication of fennel in the rain, blank with dementia like the eyes of donkeys at the instant of death. Oh, fellow strangers to my heart. So that's how awful it was. I mean, the Bernesga River sometimes had the corpses of mutilated donkeys floating by. And, you know, he was probably 7 or 8 when he remembered these things. This is just to give you a sense of who he is. I'll just read. Black advice. Nothing hides itself from the immobile sparrow hawk. His yellow eyes burn. And this is his story. Diseased waters, the mendacity of invisible faces. Don't commit incest in the wardrobes. Be on guard. They shelter asthma, attribution, spirits, maybe days and hopeless wings. Sit now and gaze on death. Well, this poem is about family memories. His father died of a kind of tuberculosis, and the implements used to drain bodily fluids from his ears, I think, became toys for the boy of 5 or 6. Cannulae is a name for some of these implements. And it said that he says that he learned to read by reading his father's poetry. His father was a minor poet associated with the famous generation of 27. But Gamoneda himself lived in extreme poverty with his mother, and for one reason or another, actually it was thought a great chance for him. He stopped going to school at 14 and went to work in a bank where, you know, he emptied the trash and sharpened the pencils. 20 years later, he was known as a poet and was able to do some things that a poet would do. He sat on some committees for prizes and stuff like that. But then he felt the weight of censorship, and for something like 7 years he did not write anything because of the censorship under the Franco regime. And when Franco died, he wrote the book called The Description of the Lie, which is the book that opened Spanish poetry to levels of freedom of expression that were totally new. And so the freedom and the innovative qualities of this book were inspirational to many younger poets. If you just look at a page, you can see it's sort of written in paragraphs rather than lines. And some of the poems that I just read are written in paragraphs rather than lines. They're maybe like Rimbaud or somebody like that who wrote prose poems, but they're more insistently rhythmic. Another thing that's difficult or interesting about Gamoneda is his vocabulary often draws on the countryside and the local politics and the political history, specifically of León. It's been a tremendous challenge to translate his work. I'm going to read the very first poem in the collection and then decide how much more to read. And I'll even let you hear some Spanish. Although it's sad, my Spanish sounds like Italian. El exilio se posó en mi lengua como el sabor de una desaparición. El olvido entró en mi lengua y no tuve otra conducta que el olvido. Y no acepté otro valor que la imposibilidad. Como un barco calcificado en un país del que se ha retirado el mar, escuché la rendición de mis huesos depositándose en el descanso. Escuché la huida de los insectos y la retracción de la sombra al ingresar en lo que quedaba de mí. So this new translation is released by Talisman Books, Ed Foster and Company. And I approached Ed because, in fact, he did an anthology of contemporary Spanish poetry, which included, I think, 12 poets, all of whom were deeply indebted to Gamoneta as a mentor, but Gamoneta was not included in Ed's anthology. So Ed agreed to do this book, which is probably the book that inspired those poets in Ed's anthology. Rust alighted on my tongue with the taste of disappearance. Forgetting penetrated my tongue, and I had no recourse but to forget, and I accepted no value other than impossibility. Like a calcified boat in a country from which the sea has receded, I listened to the surrendering of my bones being deposited in rest. I listened to the flight of insects and the retraction of the shadow on entering what was left of me. I listened until truth ceased to exist in the space or in my spirit, and I was unable to resist the perfection of silence. I do not always believe in prayers, but prayers believe in me. They have returned again, like inevitable lichen. The fermentation of summer lets itself into my heart, and my tired hands slide into the heaviness. Faces arrive that neither cast shadow nor cause the simple air to crackle, without skeleton or passing on, as if they consisted only in the contents of my eyes, in the unity of my words, in the density of my ears. They are compliant, and I feel their gathering like a healing that takes refuge in darkness. It is a friendship within myself. It is a thread prepared by soft hands inside the interior of time. Oh, it's not Erdumbre. Es un estambre urdido por manos que son suaves en el interior de los días. We were talking about the weaving metaphor. It is a thread prepared by soft hands, woven by soft hands, I might have said, inside the interior of time. And that's only the first section of a poem that has maybe 7 or 8 sections. There are 22 multi-section components to this book, and none of them are marked or separated from one another except by white space and occasional indentation. So this was a totally unique form for Spanish poetry. And again, it's associated with liberation. I'm going to continue the same part. Maybe not. I'm going to jump to the next part. It's very hard to decide, because he's collaging memories, whether he's talking about his mother, his wife, his daughters. One of the things that was introduced is sort of like the structural theme was the memories of suicides. People who committed suicide because of their inability to survive the horrors of living under Franco. And basically the poem is an invocation to 10 or 12 of these death's heads that he's talking to throughout the course. But anyway, I have no idea. This could be his best friend speaking, in other words, who had been a painter and a glass artist. I have no idea. Or it could be the poet himself. My friendship covers you like a mother her little boy who sleeps with knives. I will not put a different bandage on you than the frayed one that is around my body. I will not put a different oil on you than the one that rests within my eyes. Surely the silence of a frightening story, but there's a health that follows desperation. Remember the silence of abandoned stores. Remember the sweetness of rooms where forgetfulness rotted. Nothing held reason or hope. What were we to do? Now swifts pass through the walnut grove, and the noise shudders above me. You, far off, sleep through the screeching, my son. You who were accustomed to making the teachers crazy, and the woman who slipped through your fingers. You can come and share food and lies to my face. Why do you burn your tongue on the furrowed pumice? Why do you pry open implacable seeds, sporadic linseed? You can sing in my hands, but you already play false with your beauty. You would do better to come closer. Again, this is only part of one of these sections. So is it this teacher or his mother, or is he the one talking? I will not put a different oil on you than the one that rests within my eyes. You know, I've learned things about him. The anointment with oil is what the priest does to the corpse. And in Spain, the agonizante, the agonizing one, is actually the priest depositing the oil on the dying person, as opposed to the emotions of the dying person. So he's taking that position. To appreciate this requires, you know, more knowledge than I've been able to share as a translator. I'll read another one. This is actually from the middle of one of these long sections. Sit in the middle of the ruins. Sit sweetly in the middle or at the edge of the ruins. These are our only lands. And I begin to distinguish some seeds and laudanum and some clots that obey the movement of light. From this passion, from proverbs subsequent to your vertigo, from the animal who cries and its piety is superior to us, you would peel sealing wax and place it on my eyes, or maybe filings of nickel and other hateful materials. Nonetheless, you love the sumptuousness of the flags in the blue above the wine cellars. Do you know what it is to forget? What did you find in the reserves of forgetting? All the instructions faded away like carbide at the bottom of unfinished tunnels. All the instructions minus the pulsation of the forest and some of your traces on my hands. The river still descends, and now I sense only the smell of the water. Your sons and my daughters are submerged in the river, and those who did not forget never approach, because they would be welcomed, and perhaps were they to enter our bodies, they would die. Have you thought about patience? Have you thought about patience that is similar to an onyx? About patience that excavates tombs in sound, leaving rags to the winds that will arrive one day, that will arrive after the expulsions. The city is not clean. In the fields there's anger. Ergo and rye join and produce a substance that will be the food of our children. I have no hope, but a passion whose name you will not tell me. I have no hope, but a passion whose name will not touch your lips. I traverse my childhood and countries of morphine and wide forest in which I rested, and broad wings passed over my eyes. In the places that I reach at dawn, there are heavy fruits, some of which I gather, and my fingers are burned by glowworms. But I make the harvest and delay in reaching other places, the sleeping alcoves where my mother ages beyond my age. And the words, fever under tiles, lumps that recede, bitterness that intoxicates under the mask of sleep. What are they? What happens in me when truth is extinguished? The truth has left no more than a stench of notaries, a lascivious knit, tears, piss pots, and the liturgy of betrayal. The hydrangeas, widespread in another time, decorate the chamber most above my body. What place is this? What place is this? How are you still in my heart? There's no relief from depression in this poetry. That was 2/3 of one of these things. Now I'm going to read one of the shorter sections, and that will be... Then you can we can have Gaminade a question and answer time if you want. Who talks still to the burnt heart when cowardice has named everything? In the dung heaps placed between my spirit and the city, in the spaces of confusion and beyond, in the kitchen oiled with sadness, a persecuted being talks. He talks about unyielding ulcers. His soul sees into falsity. His lips press on illicit pauses. He talks still to the shriveled heart. A murmur in death, my ears full of light and the pigeons high above, the actions of the police. As in roiled waters, my face is beautiful in this steel, O multitude without price, happiness of anger. And you hide yourself, inhabitant of my soul. Who still tells lies in your mother's bedroom? That's Gaminade. Personal hit, I don't know what to say. In Spain at this time, you're always aware of being watched, and you're always afraid of betrayal if you said something from your heart, let's say. And that's sort of the emotion that's running through this book. I don't think he eased up in the next, this is 1974, so the next 40 years he has not eased up. He won the Cervantes Prize, which made him, in the year 2006, the most distinguished Spanish language poet. He was very supportive of people like Juan Gelman, who just died. He's very supportive of what we might call the poetry of social justice, although he insists always that what he writes is a musical composition, and it's not driven by ideology or agenda. It's the relationship of the rhythms and the images, rather than the insistence on some kind of ideological position. And yet you can detect, the social justice slant.
Speaking of music, when you translate these things, from into English, I'm sure the sound is something you're, keyed in on, no?
I think I am. I mean, the first test has to be how my English sounds. Cada distancia tiene su silencio. Each distance holds its silence. I think that's pretty good as a sound language. Y lápidas asistadas por animales portadores. Y lápidas asistadas. That doesn't make sense. Y lápidas asistadas por animales portadores. headstones attended by animals that haul. Animales portadores, animals that haul. So, portadores de calcio hasta después de la muerte, and stones attended by animal carriers of calcium until after death. I translated as headstones attended by animals that haul calcium until their death. And the only interesting part for me was haul calcium, which breaks the rhythm and the sort of also, and this phrase, animales portadores, maybe has a similar effect on the rhythm of the Spanish. So I'm very conscious of my own rhythm, and then I double check it against his and see if it's possible, helpful, or if I just have to go forward. But I think my language is, hay más memoria de su peso. There's more memory of its weight. Peso is weight. Hay más memoria de su peso. There's more memory of its weight. I think it's very good. I don't know. So, and with Prados.
Side by side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I love reading out loud. I don't know, it might have been my major in college, except I took an English major. But I did like 9 credits, which is an unusual amount. I did other theater credits solely in the oral interpretation of literature. And I think that had an effect on my work. Right now, for my recreation, maybe you want the tapes. I turn on I have a program anyway. I read about 5 pages of Joyce's Ulysses out loud before bed. I just love the rhythm so much. It's just, you know, I mean, I don't know why I picked that. Now, Emilio Prados is from the generation of 27. My stance is that he's one of the most sensitive and melancholic poets of that generation. He was in and on involved with the publication of everybody you can imagine, from Garcia Lorca, Vicente Aleixandre, who won the Nobel Prize, Luis Cernuda, Jorge Guillén. His first teacher was Rafael Alberti. He went to an institute in Madrid as a boy, and his schoolmate was Garcia Lorca, and they had a deep and perhaps even intimate friendship. This school was set up and operated. Their tutor was Juan Ramón Jiménez, was another Spanish poet of that period. The school was not the famous Residencia where all of the poets of the generation of 27 went. It was a pre-Residencia, but it was operated by the same foundation as a school for boys who had not yet achieved a certain level. Maybe they were 14 or 17. And one thing or another led Prados, and this is very strange in my view, to spend a year in Davos as a tubercular patient, which is where Thomas Mann writes his famous novel, and another year in Freiburg, where his teachers may have included Husserl, among others. So he has this incredible mystical mental equipment and a very independent nature. He's very when he started printing books, which included the books of all these famous poets, he worked with the sons of fishermen in his native town, Malaga, teaching them how to read and write the communist literature of the day, as well as how to run the presses. He was probably, my view is, repressed homosexual who loved the company of young men his age, and as he got older, perhaps younger men. And there is some kind of documentary evidence of two or three loving liaisons in his life. But what we're going to hear now is the melancholy of a person who never found physical love or intimacy, who, after the tragedy of the Spanish Civil War, lived in Mexico City in exile. He did have an adopted son who eventually married, and both his son and his daughter, the wife of the son, died, although the daughter wrote a dissertation on Prados. Prados is a major poet. He's acknowledged as a major poet of the generation of 27 and the Civil War period, but very few people have taken his Mexican work seriously. He wrote four large volumes in exile in Mexico, and what I've translated is every poem in one of those volumes called Jardín Cerrado. And in this volume, he works through his mythic landscape, you might say his symbolist landscape, with passion, consuming passion. It's like the night, the moon, the fountain. Like in any mystical poetry, there may be subliminal sexual symbols too, but it's more the tenderness of feeling that he manages to express over and over and over again. So I'm going to read, and maybe I'll make some more comments, but I'm going to, again, read the first poem, Trees. Another thing is, you know, in all of the wonderful cities of Spain, they have the Alameda or the Avenue under the poplar trees. So he misses all of that. He misses Andalusia. The first editor and publisher of this book said of it that this book represents the true flower of Andalusian poetry, that which we have anticipated since we lost the Civil War. So the trees is an address to that. Árboles en pie delgado altísimo, nivelador de vientos, el material suspiró de mi oculto silencio, dejándome vacío sobre la calle, expuesto por falta de equilibrio al fácil atropello del asalto de un grito o del cruzar de un beso, cansado se ha invadido del largo cautiverio, desatándose al río interior de mi cuerpo. I heard a Mexican radio person reading this stuff with a sort of rhetorical flourish that I tried to put into it. It just shook me up. I had been working on the book for a year, and then I heard this. It totally reinvigorated me. And the thing I like about it is that these are short lines, which are eight syllables. That's the typical thing. We have some long line things. But the number of pauses and emphases that are worked through these short lines is amazing. Trees, árboles, en pie, delgado, altísimo. Two pauses in eight syllables, you see? Nivelador de vientos, el material suspiro de mi oculto silencio. Two lines of eight syllables with no pause. Trees in stature, slender, tall, leveler of winds, the material sigh of my hidden silence, leaving me empty upon the street, exposed, off balance, easily toppled by the assault of a scream or from the encounter with a kiss. Weary, it has evaded long captivity, unleashing itself upon the interior river of my body. My brow is heavy. Perhaps my thought on its own has fused its wings with time. I do not know what ardor from outside like a desert sun in my throat, constricts the dry voice of dreaming. My feet, like two very long shadows, are fixed to the dangerous urban ground of day. Undone all the sure talk of my sadness, the roads closed to my open love. Like a useless ember consumed by a useless fire, weary of my own self, I surrender my solitude. Only a tree calls me, leveler of winds above the garden, its limbs, fingers in the sky. My brow is heavy. I draw near its shade to rest. I fold the wings of my desires, and to its soft beauty I surrender my will. I want to sleep. Who speaks among the tender rushes? In stature, slender, tall, leveler of winds, the tree is breath of my dark silence. I think I learned more about how to write a short line from translating this book than anything.
Is there evidence that he was reading Arabic poetry?
Well, that's a good story, but yes. Well, all of them read an anthology by Garcia Gomez, which was translated by my good friend in Cambridge and one-time co-editor of Ors, Kola Franzen. And that book, the Gomez Anthology, was published by City Lights and is in its third printing. It's for a poetry book. It's done remarkably well in English. I mean that's over 3,500 copies are in circulation for a poetry book. Isn't that amazing? You should have asked Kola up. She's 93. She doesn't. 91, maybe. All right. So I, fear of April, light, so much light and so slow, and so sweet, and so unwavering, and so true, on earth. Sun, so much sun, and it doesn't blind, and doesn't diminish the wind, and doesn't parch the grass. This is Mexico, you know. Flower, so much scent, and it surrenders so generously without reward to beauty. Something time forgets, or nothing it learns, or cautious and skillful it lies in ambush under the deception. Prudently, the water hides in the poplar grove and runs and runs and runs, suspicious and tender, warning the rose, awakening the sand, embracing the trunk, disheveled, nervous, sinking to the depth of the root, hidden to rise anew, rapid messenger, to speak among the mosses and tell tales on the rocks and swoon nervously over the open pool, and to groan it runs and runs, watchful and solitary, eyes upon the sky, the tongue on the ground, not knowing where it runs, nor the reason for its course, but it runs, runs, and asks, so much light and so tender and so sweet and unwavering in this springtime. So many flowers, so much scent, so much love in the earth, so many kisses in the air, so many hopeful arrows. Something time forgets, or nothing it learns, or cautious and skillful in deceit it stalks. In the sky, the dawn like an open wound, a blood-stained cloud crosses the distant mountain. Above its high leaves, already trembling, the grove prepares for battle with the advancing light. And the water runs and runs, hides in the poplar grove, depositing all over the field its serpentine brilliance, like the water, my blood running through my veins to awaken my dreams, awakens my fears. A painful ring squeezes my heart, something my body forgets or cautious awaits. The history of the garden is in the Song of Songs. It's in the medieval romance from France called the Romance of the Rose. This is about an attack on the castle that holds the rose, and it's the water undermining the thorns and the briars, and this hope of release. Something my body forgets or cautious awaits. And it goes on and on. An evening star went out. No, my heart is stopped. So this longing, door of my blood. Not to the light, to the darkness, the garden opens like deep water that never has to spring forth. It lies without source, hidden within the heart, dark like the earth. If the stars are bright, do not fear lest the wind let escape a weak lament so that they shine. Their tears are also required then to complete the closed body of the night, the limit of its skin and the affirmation of prison. Give through the captivity of his persistent flesh what otherwise were only a dream. And the grove, the sky, spilt its cup of mystery on the soil, and the music sings in whispers, falling in droplets from the highest branches, in breathing or trembling, cupola of the garden, echo and silence. The eternal is now true. For contact is not sorrow, and love is on earth without lament and without yearning, present in my body. The eternal is now true. Garden, my receptive blood, yes, already without fear, we walk through the poplar grove, you within me and me in your silences. And one of the things I did in my translations is sometimes if the gender was masculine and it was a love poem, I translated it as masculine, as I did here. I'm going to do something else. Oh God, this is such amazing stuff.
Why don't you read a little more Spanish?
Okay. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's this way. See, I have it marked this way, too. No, I don't see it. There are several poems called Insomnia, and I wanted to read one in particular. Oh, this is it. No, it's not. There's another one. There are three poems called Insomnia. And this is somewhat different because it's written in the long lines, the endecasyllabics, and you can see that on the page. So this becomes, and to transliterate the endecasyllabic into English would be like the Battle Hymn of the Republic, which is a horrible sort of rhythm to get into. But now it's long lines, and I tried to write longer lines in English too. So I'll read the little Spanish. Insomnio. Quien persigue en mi cuerpo como a golpes de azada esta sien imprecisa que va acabando el mundo. Que deserción la enciende sin luz sobre la angustia. Anima de la fiebre que en su vena ha tirauta. I'm going to read the English now. Who violates my body as if an axe crushed the imperfect temple, jarring the world? What unlit desolation illuminates anguish, the fevered spirit that throbs in its vein? Actually, that's the one I wanted to read. The one I didn't want to read. Where is it? Where's the one I didn't want to read? Ah, there it is. I'm going to read the one I didn't want to read, and then I'll go back maybe to the one I was reading. Three periods of loneliness or solitude. And it just sort of, I don't know, it hasn't been explicit yet, and John of the Cross was explicitly homoerotic to some people too. It's homoerotic, virginal, and passionate to the nth degree. And I think he had to know this. So first I'll read it in Spanish so you won't follow. Soledad, noche a noche te estoy edificando, noche a noche te elevas de mi sangre fecunda, y a mi supremo sueño curvas fiel tus murallas de cúpula intangible como el propio universo. Dolorosa y precisa como la piel de hombre, donde vive la estatua por la que el cuerpo obtienes tu entraña hueca, ajustas el paso de la estrella a la piedra y los labios y al sabor de los ríos. That's 8 lines of endecasyllabics. Now I'll try to read it in English. Solitude. Night after night I construct you. Night after night you raise yourself from my fertile blood, and true to my deepest hope, you bend your walls into a cupola intangible like the universe itself. I don't want to ruin it, but isn't that the most magnificent phallic image? Sorry. Some women like phallic imagery too. Now I'm going to go back to the one that I thought was the wrong one and then read it in English, okay? Who violates my body as if an axe crushed this imperfect temple, jarring the world? What unlit desolation illuminates anguish, the fevered spirit that throbs in its vein? Thinking hurts me, naked and agitated, rendering me drop by drop all night unconscious. Drop by drop the wound continuously oozes upon a sheet of sand, flesh of useless earth. What sin does death bury in the skin of day? What heavy chain rolls in its shadow? I don't know where my dreams burns its new origin, where the town spills beyond its limits, irrational. It left me at the edge of sleep beside an abyss, body half leaning out, with eyes open, hair hanging, face to face with the lazy nullity of time. I do not know where the timid moon arises, do not know what new image illuminates me in its desert, what sin pursues my congenitally weak eyes, what exile sterilizes the logic of my blood. I am lost in an infinite basket, without contact and without hope of ordering my grief. I do not know, did I say it, the dream. It is not the land of my origin. I do not know where oblivion coils around the future birth of my life. The night in her swamp luridly presses herself against me in search of my waist. Slowly the star begins to deny its flesh, and slowly the universe gives way to nothingness. Facing the large and horrible negation of the future, my desire flares up more anxiously. My love crumbles and asks the emptiness, for whom is this image that my blood now mimics? My birth flees. Does the world die with me? The absent throng presses me between the hours. I'm sure I could read all night, but I don't know where you are. There's one image I guess I have to share with you. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to just read like three more. So as he goes through this, the personification of solitude, I think, becomes more and more the physical companion and intimate friend that he has always hoped for. Fountain of night. I'm sensing your tread on the margins of my body, but well might you step on me so that under your foot I no longer fear it. Death, I hear you so close, and so far off do I see myself that I think perhaps I may live because already I don't desire you. So much do I walk already with you, and so faithfully do I lose myself to my own self in looking for myself without you on account of life eternal. So you will have nothing to do with me when alone and without remedy I may again be flesh of earth between your undone shadows. You will have nothing, he has nothing, who now approaches my body, nor does he find me on my lips or behind me in the dream. Constantly they call me, constantly I draw near, constantly they push me, constantly I move away, and constantly wounded I return to my solitude. The wound that begins in it is flowing inwardly. Well, we're not out of this. We're not finished yet. This one. No prison, no glory. These get more hard to follow, forgive me. I live in the center of a mirror, like a well, like a bone of that reflected world that gazes upon me in its glass. Without wanting, I sink and I rise within its transparency. I don't know if seeking a soul or to extract myself from it. He who put me here already is master of my uninformed presence, juice and flavor of the glass, pulp through which he sails. I gaze upon my body and I gaze, I don't know if from within or outside of the mirror. I seek the touch of its mirror, and my hand only finds within its own hand the blood that warms it. There's no voice that rises to my lips without being a voice that doesn't return to me. I doubt my thought, since already I don't know to where it flies, nor if for itself it seeks or from itself it moves away. Do I live at the center of that mirror that surrenders with such difficulty? Through my body, do I see the body that awaits me through my body, or is it that my body is only a window of absences? Its gale of riches may cross the world through my eyes. My body is only a road, a road that never arrives. Now, how about that for consummation? We're going to read two more. Hyacinth, you know, that's the mythologically important little flower, like a spike ring. Green and tiny between swords, hyacinth, your flower burns. My feet are seeking earth. The whole garden is a star of the night in which the bonfire of your tender flower sinks. Although tiny between swords, hyacinth, your flower burns. I am like you, captive to scent. I follow your scent, and like you, I forget myself in it, lowly ivory in flames. Although tiny between swords, hyacinth, your flower burns. Small, I keep myself in you, trembling in the clear fire that onto the inverted stars you let drop from your corolla. Although tiny between swords, hyacinth, your flower burns. As you, on being born, don't forget the soil and bend your scent and pollen toward it, pale flower, in it you heal my dismay. And although tiny between swords, hyacinth, your flower burns, and in you, with you, I find earth. And again, in the poplar grove, a star shines half open while the fountain bursts forth. Green and tiny between swords, hyacinth, your flower burns. Now I'm going to read one of these. So that's the resolution that's so lovely.
Is that the one about the knock-knock?
No, I'm not going to read that.
Knock-knock was there?
Yeah. It's also, I don't know if I can interrupt you, but I think what happens with the popular, the classic popular poetry in Spanish, it's the romance, the ballad, it's eight syllables. And, you know, this is coming from there. And a lot of it is these dialogues, like somebody says something, somebody says something. So this is like very old poetry. And Lorca did it, and Prados does it.
Well, I'm not going to read that one. Thank you for allowing me to get my breath. This is a poem that tries to pull all of these themes of the tree and the stars and the soul and the blood and the mirror and the fountain together. And probably it's not even the best of my translations, but I'm going to read it anyway. It's the last poem in the book. Now that I am looking at you, sky, earth, sun, rock, as though in examining you I might see my own flesh, only were you lacking me in it in order to see me completely as a whole man in the world and father without seed of the beautiful aura of the future. Previously, I saw my soul being born and came forward to save her, a faithful guardian, persecuted and sad, but always sure of my hand and its instruction. I assisted beauty and its happiness, although I never doubted that it betrayed the teacher, the disciple, even more if that one gave form in his liberty to his idea of the beautiful. And in this way, my mature frame donned its clothing so full of pain and blackness, like a cloudy night, without scent of flowers, without rain, and without silence. Only pursuing my way, although through soil so unfriendly, gave me the light and the strength for living. But now you open your arms, sky, earth, sun, rock, just as I had a feeling in childhood for what was to be the truth eternally. Today I feel that my tongue, mixes its saliva with the most tender drop of dew and prolongs its touches beyond me, in the grass or in the dark root, secret and moist. I watched my thought coming toward me, slowly, like water, I don't know from what rain or lake or deep sands or fountains that pulse under my heart, already supported by the rock of the mountain. Today, yes, my skin exists, but not now as the boundary that used to persecute me. Instead, like you yourselves, beautiful and blue sky, vast earth, now I am all the unity of a real body. From this body that God called his body, and now it begins to feel itself without death or life, like a rose in the constant presence of his completed word, and in oblivion of what he thought previously, even without naming it, and feared being. Demon of nothingness. I don't like the last one. Isn't that great? So he had the total resolution, and then, I've achieved my triumph, and I am what I feared to be. Demon of nothingness. Well, that's the resolution. He becomes the rose. For a solitary person, that's the only resolution, I guess. I don't know. I just don't know.
To really maintain, I think, his rhythm, the original.
His rhythm became my rhythm in this case. This is probably 3 years of translating and retranslating to get it this far. A lot more difficult, actually, than the Gamaneda, which is explosively brilliant, but this was much more engaging. It relates to my own feelings for my own body, I guess, among other things.
In Spanish, it's very difficult, it's very ambiguous, it's very almost, and there I think I see the connection with San Juan, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I left out the passage of his body stretched on a cross and bathed in blood, Prados' own body. That's in there too.
It's not. It's there anyway, right? Without being explicit.
Yeah, right.
That those iterations of the certain obsession over these words. The
what
blood,
I
the
feel
body,
is like you take eight mystical words, whatever.
Yeah.
And almost as an exercise, I tend to write exercises, he rang every possible symbolic and metaphoric change he could imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing to hear it over the whole stretch of you know...
Well, you've got three of these in your journal now,
just
right?
Just popped up online. Well, I was going to say that I got this just from my end a bit of the process because you sent me poems in one version, and then they came back several months later, maybe almost a year later.
You sense their qualitative improved intensity?
Yeah, because being who I am, I wanted to look at them, what's Don up to next, and the power, I mean, I could see, what's behind the first draft, and then in the last draft, I could see more of that present in the English. So yeah, that was great to see. I could really see the laboring over it, and you entering the poem.
Well, part of it is, I mean, it's very Elsani. This is what I talked about. Through the syllables of the line, meaning passes, but it doesn't clarify itself. Automatically, until it's well written, until it's truly written. And that's what was going on. I think actually from Creeley and Prados, I mean, as old as I am, I learned more about what I could do with a short line than I ever imagined.
And it sounds like not just the short line, and then also the materials less. Like you could take just like as you said, like eight words, or you could take
eight syllables.
Eight syllables, right? And how many changes can you bring off of those? So you can really see possibilities emerge over time.
I don't mean to put it into the discussion just because I'm opening my book bag.
No, we're waiting.
What are you looking for?
You can read a new one.
Well, this is one that many of you have read, but I think it senses some of this. Perhaps I shouldn't read it. I was just thinking it shows what I learned. Just one poem, maybe.
Well, this is one of your poems?
Yeah. Maybe it's too long. Actually, I love that one. Well, I'll do this one because it's a Gloucester poem, all right? If you indulge me. It's not a great Gloucester poem, but it's a Gloucester poem. The title is Gloucester, all right? And it's written in short lines. All of the senses a swarm of bees, wrote Dorn in Gloucester Out. I am unable to keep pace with those who have gone before. I dwell instead on a yellow tuft of compact petals and unexploded bloom, sky so sharp to my multiform eye, endless stained indigo my human brain lay on the ground, cornflower, wallflower, brittle stones corrode, rough edges, small flints, imprint skin, haut, dehaut the German word, hide, permeable in some tides, the rubbery, the red stain turns, hands to gloves, I work my lover's breasts into slick cones, like bees, how the senses shape memories of flesh and petal, delving in the garden to separate roots, hairs that stanch old lesions, bone gray, calyx stars. Bone gray, calyx stars. That's it, you know. Short lines, lots of off rhyme and slant rhyme. No real meaning except that it's one of 50 poems that make references to honeybees in my next collection. But the short lines. Those are... Actually, my paper on Olson in Louisville was on how much assonance and rhyme there actually is in some of his poetry. So that this, again, was indicative of that, as was the work with Travis. Well, thank you.
How do you come by your knowledge of Spanish language and literature and history and all that?
Avid reading. Some, you know, intensive residencies in language schools, and a lot of help from Francisca. And